Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to welcome back Barb Larson. Barb is horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. She's been with us a number of times over the years to talk about what's going on in her garden and my garden and your garden. So I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along today. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. We already have some wonderful photos posted, flower photos posted there today. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post your own photo or ask a question there. And Barb, great to have you back.
I'm glad to be here, even though we're kind of wrapping up the garden season.
Yeah,
but there's still lots to do inside and outside, Bob.
Yeah, I would expect so. What kind of? Let's talk about perennial beds for a minute. What do we need there in the perennial beds?
Well, this is the time of year that you have to decide: are you going to clean them up? Are you going to cut some of those perennials back? So the ones that I call the ugly winter perennials, things like daylilies and hostas, that after we get all these frosts and freeze and they die down to just kind of mushy nothing, I like to clean those out really well. I like to do that with peonies too, because it reduces disease, leaf disease in the peonies. Yeah. But the especially our native perennial flowers and our grasses, our ornamental grasses, are beautiful all winter long.
So
as long as they didn't have an insect or disease problem, I leave those up. So it's a good time to kind of clean things up.
And roses?
Roses depends on the kind of rose. If you have one of those hardy shrub roses, the good news is you really don't have to do much of anything. But the things like the hybrid teas and those that are grafted and aren't completely hardy, now's the time to get from another part of the yard a little bit of soil and start slowly mounding the soil over the crown of the plant, letting it freeze really well as the ground freezes, and then put in the extra insulation. Like the rose cones, which I hate, but leaves and those things I like better.
Helen in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Helen.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
That's good. Two questions. One, how early can you start a lasagna garden?
You could have done it a month, 6 weeks ago. You can do it now. That's fine. Actually, I like doing it in fall, because as you start putting down that, you can put your newspapers down and your compost right over the grass, and it will help decompose it over the wintertime.
Okay, you don't have to wait till the first frost or anything like that.
Well, I know you're in Milwaukee, but I'm in Kenosha. I know we're darn close. Yeah. It's really close.
Okay, all right. And then the second thing, I've seen these maple trees along the street, and my neighbors have some, with big black dots on them or spots.
Yep. When I saw the note up, I even said to Larry, Wednesday, our Master Gardener volunteers answered 5 questions, and 3 of them were on this, and it's tar spot of maple. It is incredibly common this year, especially right along the lake. And it is a fungal leaf disease. It's aesthetic only. The really important thing, though, is a good cleanup this fall. So most of the time, I don't mind if you don't have a lot of grass under there, leaving those leaves in and let them kind of decompose, but they will reinfect the tree next year. So Brian Huddleston, our plant pathologist, really recommends a good fall cleanup. You can even put these in the compost pile. That's fine, but don't leave them around your maple trees.
Oh, you can put them in the compost pile?
Yep, it's fine to put them in the compost pile. You could even till them into your vegetable or flower gardens if you've got annual gardens.
Well, that's what we were going to do, but then we didn't know if we could do that.
Yeah, this is one of the few ones that you can do that with.
Okay, and the name of it again is what?
Is Tar Spot, and we actually have a very nice one-page fact sheet. And so if you go to hort.uwex.edu, okay, and in the search box put tar spot, or you could even put maple in, that fact sheet will come up.
All right, fine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. We had an email from Judy in Platteville, Barb, and Judy says, I haven't planted my garlic yet. I have the patch prepared, but now the ground is saturated. What do I do? Should I try to plant and hope for the best? Help!
Well, garlic's a lot like the tulips and daffodils. You fall plant it. I would let it dry just a smidge before I would plant it, but I think you're fine yet to plant it this fall. And if it's that wet that it's so saturated, that's not a good place to plant bulbs anyway.
Yeah, yeah, good point. Sue in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I was wondering when the best time to transplant spireas are.
We're really late now to plant. If you had called 6 weeks ago, I would have said you could transplant them in fall. Now I would wait until, you know, March, April, May, sometime in there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Eau Claire, it is your turn. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
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 Question about, I have two young, relatively young Macintosh apple trees. They're about 4 years old.
Okay.
And I have yet to get a blossom on either tree. I'm wondering if I can do something this fall as far as pruning or something, get them to blossom and produce some apples.
Well, I think they're just not old enough yet. Trees have a juvenile period, and then they switch into the adult period. And when they switch to the adult period, then they start forming flowers and fruits. And especially in the apples, some varieties of apples take a few more years than others in order to get mature enough or old enough to become adult. So I would say give them another year or so. Don't heavily fertilize them, which actually stimulates leaf growth over flowers. They are in full sun, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And you should be kind of doing some regular pruning and training. That's really important in fruit trees to, as they're young, to train them. And if you're not aware of it yet, we have a really nice publication on growing apple trees. So I would get that publication. You may actually want to call your or contact your county extension there. Rather than trying right now, our online publications are not working right. So if you would just contact Eau Claire County and they can fix you up with that publication.
And if things don't work out with your apple tree next year, I know some people say it's a good idea to take a baseball bat to it and, and really whack it. Whack it around about 5-6 times with a baseball bat. And the folks at Jung's recommend that.
Yeah, I know. And what you're doing is you're damaging it enough to stress it.
That's what you're doing.
I mean, there's all sorts of other things. That's why I'm always a little hesitant to recommend that one. I don't want too much damage.
I'll tell you, the last time we had a rep from Jung's on, somebody called in to say, "Oh, you recommended that last year, and it worked great."
Oh, did it work? Okay,
it worked great. And Dick Zondag said it works right every time.
Of course, you know that's in that. I know, and I've had people swear that that works, and I've had people try it. But is it just also that it finally got old enough to,
well, that's true too.
You know,
that's true too.
But there, I mean, there is actually a physiological reason why it works. So.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Matthew in Dunn County, on to you. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Larry. Aside from using a baseball bat, is there any tips I can get on getting rid of moles over the fall or winter in my yard?
They should cease to be a problem here in the next week or so.
Yeah, they should settle down. I don't know of any. There are mole poisons. There are mole traps. There are all sorts of things, but they tend to be a bigger problem in the growing season than they are in the wintertime.
Right. Now, I was just looking to see, because they're everywhere. I think I have every mole in the county.
Yeah, and I don't even pretend to be a wildlife expert. I know we've got, I'm pretty sure, in fact, I'm sure we have a fact information
there
on moles.
Yeah.
And I just remember off the top of my head, most of them are either traps or poisons and that kind of thing. And I'd always be concerned about poisons.
Yeah, Scott Craven's on Wednesday. We could bring it up with him. I know one way that has worked really well is to have sort of a basket.
A box of bacon grease?
Get some bacon grease on a rat trap.
Yep.
And then open the tunnel up and put the rat trap there, and then put the box, the basket over so, you know, the kitty doesn't get in it or whatever. And somebody, One of the callers that had trapped 11 that way.
Oh, okay.
Off right. his lawn.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned that before. I've yeah. never, yeah, not heard it.
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure it's moles. They're underground. It's not voles.
Nope, it's moles.
Okay.
They're underground.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thanks, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show, and you can post right there. Sue Ellen in Mequon, you are next. Hi, Sue Ellen.
Hi. I had a soil test done, and my soil pH is a 7.0.
Okay.
I'm surprised about.
Yeah.
I have, of course, a number of plants that like a more acid soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, should I be adding aluminum sulfate, coffee grounds, a sphagnum moss, and especially for the organic matter, what's the best way to incorporate it?
Okay, the best way to lower soil pH is to add sulfur. So flowers of sulfur work really well, or what's called elemental sulfur, so I would work that in really well. That's great that you have a soil pH of 7, so a lot of plants will be very happy there, and with just adding some sulfur, you can get it down, oh, a little bit, depending on what the actual soil type is. That does make a difference on how easily you can adjust that soil. But adding sulfur, usually every year, I do that. I have a soil pH very similar, just slightly more acidic than you do. I'm really lucky where I live. And so adding that sulfur every year, working it in around the plants, makes it easier for me to grow those kinds of plants. Now, there are certain ones you still can't grow. Blueberries, some of the ones that really like those soil pHs down in the 5s, you can't. But the ones that like a little bit acidic soil, you're in good shape. As far as organic matter, there's a lot of variation in that. I think the positive effects of organic matter are to improve the quality of the soil, the tilth of the soil, you know, the crumble, how well it crumbles, all those kinds of things, more than changing the soil pH.
Okay.
There you go.
Very good. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Steve in Kiwani, I believe. Your turn. Hi.
Kiwani. Hi. I've got beds of tall phlox.
Okay.
And they're all cut down and removed now. But over the years, I've been fighting grass and other weeds, leafy weeds, mullein and other things that are, and they're still there.
Right. Okay.
Can I round up that?
If you are sure that the phlox is completely dead, cut down, you don't have to worry about it. I would still be very careful in going in there. My other concern is that even though the grasses are still there, the mullein is still there, it's now gotten cold enough that I'm not sure how actively growing those grasses are and the mullein is. And glyphosate, which is Roundup, really doesn't work very well.
50 degrees.
If it's really cold, because the plants have to be actively growing in order for it to really be effective.
Sure.
So I really question that you would get much of a kill at all.
Any other remedies? Because this stuff is green all winter.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's there in the spring before everything comes
well,
up, too.
Well, then that might be your better option, because as that starts to grow before the phlox grows, as you start to notice that push out new growth, that would be the time to treat it.
I'm afraid of hitting the buds of daffodils and other things.
Well, and that's where then the glove of death or the tongs of death or the paintbrush of death, you know, when you dip it in and then paint individual areas rather than spraying the whole thing.
Sure.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Costco, it is your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hey, my question is more of a yard grass question. In the last couple of years, it's been really wet in this area, but so I know that's how this has happened. My backyard, which is shady, I do English gardening, is turning into a field of moss.
Mm-hmm.
With this very sparse grass. I mean, I can actually reach down and pull up maps of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's, what can I do, if anything?
Well,
to get my grass back.
I guess
because I don't have to mow it.
I think the first thing you might want to think about is embracing the moss.
Yeah, either that or cut down all your trees.
Well, yes, and see, that's what I don't
the
like.
The wind—they've been going away little by little.
If the problem is moss really won't outcompete grass unless it is in the environment that it grows better than grass. And you described really bad conditions for grass, shade, moist, all of those. And my guess is you may have a little more compacted soils
yes.
in places.
Yes.
Those are absolutely perfect conditions to have moss grow. And it doesn't make any difference what the soil pH is because there's different kinds of moss. It has to do with the wet, compacted, shady conditions. That's the main things that what it is. So you either change the environment, which actually Larry's right. You limb up your trees, you cut some of them down, so that you get more air and light and dryness in there, and then try to grow grass. Or you say, okay, it's pretty, and I'm going to have a moss garden, which is actually very, very in. Yes, very,
yes.
Very designer to have a moss garden.
Well, I could sell it from my yard. People can come get it.
Yeah. But they're really, I mean, there are things that will kill moss, but they basically burn it off short term, and for long term, it comes back.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, all right, thanks, Mary.
Good luck.
Oh, sometimes we just can't help. Well, you had the right advice. It's just that you don't want to. A lot of people don't want to follow that advice.
They don't,
and I can see why.
Yeah, I can. I just look at it that it's kind of a cool. It's a cool plant. It's interesting, but then I'm weird too.
Well, let's see what's on Brenda's mind. Brenda in Dubuque, Iowa. It is your turn. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Hey, we have a problem in this area anyway with a fungus on the blue spruce. Colorado blue spruce is around that's really taken a toll on them. And we have one that's a pretty good size in our yard, and I noticed it's all by itself, but I noticed the last couple months ago that it's starting to look thin on the bottom, like it seems like that's how it starts. Wondering, and then I thought, well, it's going to freeze, and so it should be okay, but I'm wondering now if there's something I should be doing to save it, or if there's anything.
Well, my guess is that the fungus you're talking about is called Cytospora canker. It's very common in northern Illinois. It would be so in Iowa, in southern Wisconsin. And the problem is that we're trying to grow mountainous trees in the Midwest where it gets very hot and dry in the summertime and we can have way too wet soils. And these blue spruces get to be just usually big, beautiful trees, and then they do exactly what you described. They start dying out, branch at a time, quite often from the bottom up, but not always. And
it's
this
is just heartbreaking.
Yeah. I had somebody, actually, believe it or not, I had somebody bring a sample into my office yesterday with the exact same thing.
Oh, boy.
Big blue spruce. They had 5 or 6 of them, and they're starting to die now.
Yeah.
And there is no treatment for this. It's a stress-related disease. So the recommendation is to, as those branches start to die, prune those off. Water when we have long dry spells, and they get to the point where they get too ugly to hang around anymore, and then you replace them. Actually, the couple I talked to yesterday, we talked about them putting in other evergreens to get those started so that when their blue spruces got to the point where they looked really bad, they would have something
some
else replacing them.
Yeah, it's a good
Pretty much a done deal, then.
Yeah.
They won't live.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, and it's just a matter of how long it takes them to die.
Ah, okay, that's what I was afraid of, but that's good to know.
Sorry, I just have to be honest. There's no magic cure.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, man. An email from Amy. I pulled out my dahlias, shook the dirt off, left them to dry, but then neglected to get them inside before the snowstorm here in central Wisconsin. Are they still viable for next year, or should I just toss them and start over?
Well, I would wait and see.
Yeah, me too.
Snow is a great insulator, so it actually is, they could very, very well be fine. I would, you know, store them, make sure you dry them out really well before mm-hmm. you store them. But, you know, they're, I never like to give complete predictions. I did with the blue spruce, but mm-hmm. others, give it a try. You're not out anything. You can always buy new ones next spring if they don't make it.
Got an email from Jason in Madison, who's got a pepper, cayenne, and a tomato sun gold in large pots on his balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Normally lets them die over winter, but yesterday I discovered a dark, cool storage area in my apartment building that might work as a root cellar. Can I cut back and try to overwinter either of these plants?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't do it.
There's others. Like geraniums can be done that way. I mean, the red geraniums can. But if you want, there are some people that will grow tomatoes, small pot tomatoes, and peppers indoors as kind of a house plant. If you have a lot of light, you might be able to get fruits or, you know, give it a try if you want to try to keep them. But to put them in a storage area,
nope. Gary in Mason, Wisconsin, it is on to you now. Hi.
Hi. I had a question. I have a couple of apple trees, which I unfortunately haven't gotten into the ground yet. And they're in tubs, and they're standard trees. But I'm wondering if how I would proceed to either winter them over. There is not frost in the ground yet, but it seems like it's kind of late for the secondary roots to establish. What would be your approach to that?
I would still put them in the ground. Just because the biggest concern I would have is insulating those roots.
Right.
And so if you leave them in a tub, then you've got to worry about getting that root ball insulated. And Mother Nature, the ground, the soil is the best insulator. So I would go ahead and put them in. And then after the ground freezes, mulch it really well to help keep that ground nice and evenly cold. Because that's what winter mulching really does, is it prevents that freeze-thaw where we can actually have things heave out of the ground.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that's the best chance of getting them to make it through the winter.
Great. I just had a comment, too, in regards to wintering over peppers.
Mm-hmm.
Every year we've taken a couple of our better pepper plants out of the garden and brought them in the house and put them in the basement and let them go into dormancy. And then we start, you know, watering them more aggressively in the spring. And we always get really early peppers from them.
Okay. All right.
Oh, man.
So
you're a better gardener than I am.
Well, actually, it's kind of a lazy, fair approach to it because there doesn't require a lot of maintenance, but it works. So.
Okay, well, you're the first one I've heard say that they did that with peppers. So,
okay,
see, I learned stuff too.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling, Gary. Appreciate it. And Jim in Irma, we are on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, good morning. We've got an old asparagus patch. It was real productive, and then the quack grass up here is really taken over the years, and the only solution I can think is to really get in there and dig down deep. Is that going to damage the top of the next year's crop?
Yes.
I can do that, but I just give up a year's crop.
Yeah, well, you know, believe it, if it's a really old patch and you've got more quack grass than you have asparagus,
right,
you might be better off starting a new patch.
Would it be worth digging those old roots out, or are they pretty much, we're talking about your old roots now?
Yeah, they're old roots, and if you dug them out, you would have to go through every single one to make sure that you got any little piece of quack grass out of there.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And some of the new varieties now, the asparagus, boy, the male,
mm-hmm.
all male types are really good.
Right, yeah. So in some ways, you're better off, although it's a lot of work, I know.
Yeah, it's a pain. Patricia in Madison, on to you. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there. Thank you for this wonderful program. Do you recommend cutting back hardy chrysanthemums for the winter or letting them, you know, just catch the snow?
Well, chrysanthemums are one that they usually recommend you cutting them back because chrysanthemums tend to have a lot of, sometimes, although they may look healthy, tend to have more diseases and those kinds of things. So chrysanthemums, even though they don't get mushy and yucky like hostas do, would be one that you'd be better cutting off. And chrysanthemums really do better after the ground freezes, winter mulching those with either straw or I like leaves that have curled up. But wait until the ground is completely frozen or really good and cold.
Well, I have some mums that are now 45 years old by my home, and
wow.
I never mulched them.
Well, it's then don't listen to me.
It's just the cutting back that I was interested in.
Yeah, have you always cut them back?
I think I've gone, you know, either way. Some years I do and some years I don't.
Okay, all right. So
you got perfect conditions there, right where you are, Patricia.
Yeah, the key for mums and getting them through the winter is you've got to have good drainage on them.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And BJ in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, BJ.
Good morning. Hi. I've got a 35-year-old maple tree in my front yard, and it is leaning. And it seems like it's leaning so bad that the bark towards the bottom of the tree is actually splitting. Is that something that the tree's going to die and fall over?
Well, the first thing I'm always concerned about if somebody tells me they have a leaning tree is if it falls over, what's it going to fall on? And now that you're telling me that there's splits or something wrong with the bark, now I'm worried about even more about the structural integrity of that tree. So I suggest you contact a certified arborist and have the tree evaluated for structure and health.
Mm-hmm.
And if you Google Wisconsin Certified Arborist, you will come up with a listing of certified arborists in, and you can put your zip code or whatever in and find ones for your area.
Yeah, I think you need a professional to look at it.
Yeah, this is a safety or potential safety issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my thought too.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. We have an email from Carl in Madison. Is it too late to put milky spore around our yard? We had a bumper crop of Japanese beetles this year, and I heard that will help kill their larvae.
Well, we don't recommend milky spore because milky spore sometimes has trouble overwintering in Wisconsin. So this is not a good time to do that. The other problem is that controlling the larvae don't necessarily reduce, which are grubs, lawn grubs, mm-hmm. necessarily reduce the amount of adult beetles you have in your yard, because those Japanese beetles can fly quite a distance, they fly quite well too. If you removed every single one that might be in your lawn, you could still have thousands of Japanese beetles. So that's not a good control measure. Instead, I would look at controlling those first ones as they first come out. Watch for them in mid-June to early July. Can't remember where you're from. But if you help keep those populations down, it seems to help.
Mike in Coon Valley, on to you now. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
You bet. I'm going to have access to a bunch of mulch from some pine trees that are going to be taken down, the needles and limbs that are being ground up.
Uh-huh.
Are there plants you want to avoid putting that around, or are there some that are more beneficial to have pine tree mulch?
Well, my first concern is whenever you have a fresh cut mulches like that, as they begin to decompose, they do use up a lot of nitrogen. So I would want to put them off to the side first, or put them in a very thin layer, no more than about an inch deep, around your plants. Are your soils really, really, really acidic to begin with?
Probably average.
Okay, then I wouldn't worry about it. But pine needles do take longer to decompose. I don't know that I'd really want to use it around my flowers that much or on a vegetable garden, but certainly around trees and shrubs are okay. What kind?
Blueberries.
Blueberries especially you get out to the northeast part of the country, are mulched with pine needles mm-hmm. often. So you could do that. That would be fine.
Okay, once it's aged, it's not going to really bother anything else?
Right, no. Let it age. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're right.
Right, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Jill in Madison next. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. I have a question. I got a it's a Colorado blue spruce sapling, mm-hmm. and I want to know if I should cover it for the winter so that when the snow, when we start getting heavy snow, it doesn't knock it over or, you know, get way too heavy on it.
No, you don't want to cover it because that would cause even greater problems. It should be just fine in the snow.
Okay.
And it shouldn't fall over or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
thanks a lot for calling. An email from Carol in Wisconsin Rapids who says, we have an ancient Christmas cactus, which we inherited a couple of decades ago. I've abused it terribly through the years, given no attention at all, and it's bloomed beautifully most years around Christmas. This year it has only one bud, and I'm wondering if it's finally giving up the ghost. Do you have any advice for reviving it? We did repot it several years ago, but it may be pot-bound again.
I think that's the first thing I would look for,
yeah.
Is it pot-bound? And the other is, if you're not doing anything special to make it bloom, then it shouldn't need something different. My other thing is if it's been moved to a different room where it may not be quite as cool at night or something like that, that may be the reason. So I would look at, have you changed the environment at all? And then the second would be, is it pot bound?
Brian in Manchester, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? Great show.
Thank you.
Two quick questions, and I'll take my answers off the air. The first one is, I'm overwintering my New Guinean patients, and they're doing fantastic. They're getting a little leggy because of what window I have them in.
Sure.
But I was wondering if I could expect those to bloom, to continue to bloom like they are all winter long. And my second question is, I wanted to add a couple of the fluorescent light bulbs that are supposedly great for growing things. I wanted to know if anybody had anything to recommend for using on my houseplants in the basement to give more light. And that's all. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. I think it depends on how much they light they get, whether or not they're going to continue blooming. I always, when I try to overwinter those kinds of things, my biggest concern is just getting them through the winter time so that in the spring, you know, February or so, early March, I can take cuttings and in order to get new ones for next year. So I don't even worry that much about bloom, but if you can try to give them as much light as possible, you may continue. Now, remember, anytime you're growing anything indoors, they will slow down. They don't usually require as much fertilizer. In fact, quite often, a lot of people don't fertilize at all in wintertime because the plants slow down so much. Be careful not to overwater them either. Keep them nice and warm. They're a warm weather kind of plant. And then the other question was, what about the fluorescents? The mm-hmm. most important thing in those is the amount of light output. So that's what the plants need, is the highest amount of light that they can get. So that's how I would compare more than anything else.
Glenna in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Glenna.
Hi. I have about a dozen nice geraniums. And I hear, oh, you take them out of the pot, you hang them upside down in your basement. And others say, oh, no, you just leave them in the pot and don't water them, put them down in a dark basement. What's the best way to keep these over the winter?
I would suggest you try several ways and see what works best for you, because I've talked to people that have done both ways. And had success both ways, both knocking them out of the pot, hanging them upside down, and letting them basically kind of dry up for the winter. I've had people that, as you mentioned, just leave them in the pot and do it that way. I've also had people that treat them like houseplants and keep them growing in indoors, you know, very slowly. But they get really tall, ugly, leggy, and then doing cuttings from them in the springtime, just like we talked about with the impatience. So which one is better? A lot of it depends on the conditions you have in the basement. If you have those nice kind of cool, dry conditions, kind of root cellar conditions, you probably would have better luck with hanging them upside down or letting them go dormant. If you have kind of a typical newer house where it's nice and warm and everything, you might be better off trying to keep them growing more like a house plant.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Pewaukee, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I've had a problem with my pear tree. We have lots of pears on it, a while back. But it was getting too big, and so what I did is I pruned it as if it was an apple tree. And I don't think the pear tree liked that. And so last year I didn't have any pears. This year I had a few, but I'm concerned with some vertical sprouts sticking up in there now. Should I prune those off, or what should I do with them?
Vertical sprouts off the branches or out the suckers off the root system?
No, off the top of the branches. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are water sprouts, and it could partially be the pruning method that you use that would actually encourage more of those water sprouts. They're very quick, rapid-growing, straight-up shoots.
Yeah, they're 2 feet long.
Yeah, those are water sprouts. And the recommendation for those is to prune those off flush, so flat against the main branch. It's one of that's how you do water sprouts. This isn't great time of year to do it.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
March. 5th.
I would march when dry. Pears are very prone to fire blight, so make sure that you've got a long dry spell before you do any of that kind of pruning. Also, some people actually prefer to do water sprouts. It's harder to see them in closer to later on in summertime because they won't reshoot quite as much. But if you've got a lot of them, I would definitely do them when you do your spring pruning.
That's what I'll do.
Okay. Right.
Thank you very much for the help.
Yeah,
thanks,
Bill, for calling. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Let's turn to Jerry in Two Rivers. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I have a front yard that's overrun with dandelions.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to know at what time of the year and what to use to dispose of them.
Well, let me ask, is more than 50% of your yard dandelions?
I would say yes.
Okay. If you're not going to like this answer. If over 50% of your yard is weeds, so in this case, dandelions or mostly dandelions, the recommendation is to kill off the whole thing and start all over again. Because if you have that many, it's really hard to just individually spot, treat, and control them. The best time, to answer your kind of first question, the best time to control dandelions and most perennial lawn weeds is September and October. We're really past that time period now. Things are into dormancy or going into dormancy, even if they're still green. So now then the second best time would be April into May or even into early June. And our turf specialists actually recommend spot treatment with anything that's labeled. Almost everything kills dandelions. So anything that's labeled dandelion killer. They find that the overall kind of weed and feeds don't work that well.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling,
Thanks for
Jerry.
Calling.
Russ in La Crosse. Hello to you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Russ.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I have an egress window well that's made out of block, and I left enough room, probably 9 inches by 5 feet, and I want something to look at in the basement area, and it gets some sun. I just want to know, like, what's a good flower that I don't have to, do maintenance with, that I can just plant, and then it'll keep coming back every year.
Okay. My biggest concern is that you also have something that if you have to actually use that window in an emergency, you can get out through there. So I think I would look at, I'm assuming that that would probably stay, you know, pretty hot and dry. I don't know. You're going to have to kind of figure it out. But I'm thinking maybe one of the ground cover sedums, which would like the dry and hot, or some of the other ground cover kinds of things, so that you've got some green down in there, but it's not going to fill it in so completely that you can't get out if you need to in an emergency. But you're going to have to kind of figure out how much sun you get down there. Does it stay really wet in there and some of those kinds of things?
It's like kind of like mediocre. I mean, it has some kind of moisture to it. I mean, it's open to the weather environment.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it gets the sun reflection off the window and some during the morning time.
And that's why the one that popped into my head were the low ground cover sedums. Not the big tall ones like the Autumn Joy, but the really low ones that are really actually a succulent, so mm-hmm. that they kind of are pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Do they get colorful?
You can get them with variegated leaves. You can get them with different colors in them. And they do bloom little star-shaped, usually either pink or yellow flowers.
Oh, all right. I mean, bloom like a big bloom?
No. This is in that subtle beauty kind of thing.
But big head on it or nothing like that.
No. I mean, the other is, I was trying to think what else. Some of the lower grasses might work, but I think I'd stick with look around at some of the ground covers and see what you like the looks of. I think those might be your best options.
Good luck. Thank you, Russ.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And we'll take some more calls here, but I got to remind you, our guest today is Barb Larson. She's been dishing out some great advice here for the last 45 minutes, and she'll be with us for a whole lot longer as we talk with her on this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Barb Larson, our guest today on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, answering the phones when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Don't forget you can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or comment there and even a photo. And Tony and Shano up next. Tony, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
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 My question is, I purchased a hens and chick in kind of like a strawberry pot where they came out of all different sections.
Sure.
What can I do with that? Can I bring it in the house and it survives, or do I have to put it outside?
I would bring it in the house to make sure you get it through the winter. I think it would do much better that way rather than trying to leave it outdoors.
Okay, and does it take much water?
They are succulents, so remember those nice thick leaves, so be careful not to overwater it. It will actually use even less water through the wintertime than it would have used outside. And you want to put it in as much sunlight as you can. So it will like a nice, bright, sunny window. And check with your finger to make sure that the potting soil is very dry or pretty well dried out before you water it.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, make sure you got drainage. It should have a drainage hole in it.
Thanks very much, Tony, for calling. Mona in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Mona.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I was wondering, I ordered some trillium root on the internet, purple and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed the instructions, laying them on their side, and then, I don't know, 2-3 inches deep. I can't remember how deep it was. I planted them. And, of course, it was late in the summer. They didn't do anything. Do you think they'll come up and even flower this coming spring?
I don't know if they will flower. It's like, it's wait and see. That's part of the fun things about gardening is it's kind of this trial and error. But they're, they're a spring blooming plant, so they come up fairly early in the spring. Don't panic. Just kind of wait and see it. Whether they'll flower depends on the size of the roots and some of those kinds of things, how much energy was stored in there. A lot of perennials, whether they're native or not, usually take a year or two, especially if they're fairly small when they're planted, before they get big enough to bloom.
They were about 2.5 to 3 inches long, some of them.
Yeah, and I just can't tell you for sure. I'm
Okay.
And I wanted to mention about the hens and chicks that somebody just called and asked that question, because I was wondering the same thing. And I planted some in some little high-heeled shoes, or little type pump-type shoes, and put them out. And last year I put them in my garage, and they came back just fine.
Okay, that's a great idea, too.
To bring them in the house, but it worked.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, there's one of those that will kind of go dormant, and so you do have to be, if you put them in the garage or in a cool spot, they will make it that way too, sure. Great idea. Thanks.
Thanks, Mom.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate that call. Frank in Janesville, hello to you. Let's get you on here. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Great program. Say, I have some beautiful flowering crabs. They're probably 18 years old, they're quite full, about 18 inches or 18 feet tall, and spread across about 12 to 14 feet. They're getting pretty thick. I'm wondering what's the proper way to go about pruning those.
You would prune those. Remember we talked about with the guy with the pear tree, if you were listening earlier, we talked about removing water sprouts. So that would be the first thing I would look for, and those are rapidly straight up shoots and crab apples. Some of them are prone to them. Not all varieties get them, but some do. So I would first start by pruning those out. It sounds like you don't have any suckers coming up from around the off the at the base of the tree at all.
I don't.
Okay, that's great. A lot of the newer varieties of crabs don't do that as often. And then otherwise, I would look for the typical pruning things that we look for. So any crossing branches, any rubbing branches, anything like that, I would remove those. And if you get to that point, then kind of step back and see how it looks. And I would do it in the, again, like most of our fruit trees, because crab apple is actually an apple tree. It just has smaller fruits on it. I do it in February or March before it leafs out so you can actually see the structure on it. But if it's healthy and it's doing well, I wouldn't do a lot of pruning on it.
Nope.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. And Dawn in Fox Lake, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I have a mini dwarf apple tree. And it's about 5 years old, and during a windstorm this year, it split at the graft. And it didn't, of course, it didn't split all the way through, and you're going to laugh at me. I took a piece of fabric and some duct tape, and I, you know, bound it up.
Okay.
And it did leaf out this year. Of course, it didn't produce any fruit, and it looked healthy, but I haven't done anything. I haven't checked it since. Is there something I should do? Should I check on it? Can I save it?
I think you need to peek. And see, I mean, if you got it right away and it was at the graft, it's possible, because basically what you did is you splinted it similar to what it would have done when it was possibly even grafted to begin with.
Right.
And so I would take that off and take a look. It could have healed right back up again.
Okay. And if it does look, should I rewrap it for the winter or just leave it be? Or?
If it looks like it's pretty well healed together, and I would leave it as is.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right, well, thank you.
Thanks
a lot for calling. And Janice in Shiocton. Hello.
Good morning. Good
morning.
For a great program.
Thank you.
I have a honeysuckle bush or vine. It's growing more than a vine. It's actually bloomed 3 times this year, but it's as high as the garage roof, and I've never trimmed it. I just keep propping it up against the garage. Do you trim these, and where and how?
Well, I guess my first question is it a bush or is it a vine?
Well, it's growing like a vine.
Okay, so it twines up on the
trellis.
Okay. It's a vine then. And as you're finding, honeysuckle vines can be pretty aggressive, so you can be pretty aggressive in their pruning.
Really?
So you can,
hack them off.
Yeah, whack it way back. Yeah, and you can do it now, or you can do it in the spring.
Oh,
now
either
it's fine.
Way.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's such a, and the hummingbird, of course, loves it.
Sure. Sure.
I have one more question. I bought a flowering crab, and it was apparently grafted on a white apple tree of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't get at it, and the crab apple that I want has grown smaller than the white apple. I assume it's a white apple. I haven't had fruit on either one. Can I still, and we're talking 8 feet, the tree that it was grafted on, can I still trim that off? And it needs more sun, and we're going to take care of that this winter. Can I still cut that tree off that it was grafted?
I don't think so. I think it's way past the time you can do that. If it's so much that those suckers up from that root system are 8 feet or more tall, too late. You can enjoy it as a bicolor, and eventually your desirable one may go away, but or replace it. You probably are better off replacing it.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Donna bought some tuberous begonias and brought them in before it froze, actually. Should I have left the foliage freeze and then winter over the bulbs? How do I best keep them for next spring?
No, you don't have to, but let the tops die back on their own. Cut them off so you get only the tubers. And then usually tuberous begonias are overwintered in dry sphagnum or something like that. A lot of people just put them in a box and put them in their basement, a cool, dry place.
And so, Bob in Wausau says, please tell the man with the dandelions to eat and drink and enjoy a great salad. Don't kill the pretty little things. The bees will not be happy with him and will come back to haunt him.
Oh, that's pretty scary. I like the eat and drink part, though. That sounds good.
Yeah, but a lot. When you've got a lawn that's
that many dandelions. I know.
Over half dandelions.
You know,
depressing.
When my girls were little many years ago, I used to always like that because they enjoyed the dandelions so much.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, they're pretty and they smell good.
Pretty.
Barb Larson, our guest. Barb is horticulture educator with the UW Extension in Kenosha County. Our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Barb Larson, horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. It's great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Emily in Milwaukee has a question for you, Barb, so let's go there.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. I had a question about azaleas. I was wondering the best way to grow them here. I know you have to have cold, hardy ones, and I know my dad is totally showing me up in Oklahoma with all of his beautiful azaleas. What's the best way to grow them in Milwaukee?
Well, you actually hit it right on the head. You've got to find the cold hardy varieties, and there are a number now that have been developed. A lot of them at the University of Minnesota, the Northern Lights series, and they're beautiful plants. So that's what I would look at. The other, though, my biggest concern is, since you're in Milwaukee, is your soil pH. And if you if you haven't had your pH done, sounds like having your hair done. if you haven't had a soil test done, so you know the soil pH, that would be an important thing to do, is find out what your pH is. If it's too high, if you're up in the upper sevens or even eight, then you may never grow azaleas really well. Well, I would look for pHs 7 or even lower. And if it's borderline, you can add sulfur to it. Elemental sulfur, flowers of sulfur is what it's called, to help lower the soil pH. But check that soil pH if you're having trouble. Otherwise, just look for a hardy variety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you have time for a quick question about Creeping Charlie, how do you get rid of it? And then I can take my questions off.
Well, Creeping Charlie is really difficult to get rid of, and you didn't mention whether it's grass or whether it's your flower beds. In grass, there are some herbicides, if you don't mind using those, that work with Creeping Charlie. The one I like is one called Triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. But it's getting tough to get rid of.
Yeah, and it's too late this year anyway.
Yes, absolutely too late. And so you want to, actually the recommendation is treat it during bloom And then again, usually in September, if you still have some left.
Susan in Madison, on to you. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a question about a small peony plant. It was my grandmother's. It's nearly 100 years old.
Oh, my. Uh-huh.
It's had five homes in different geographic locations. I moved it here 2 years ago to my home. And the first year, it surprised me and bloomed beautifully, as I recall it from my grandmother's home. But this year, it did not bloom at all. So I'm wondering, first of all, about the general care of peonies, and secondly, if I should be cutting it back for the winter.
Well, let me do the last question first. Yes, you should cut it back for the winter. Peonies are one I really like to cut back because they do tend to get some leaf diseases and things. Is it in full sun?
No, it is in a partial sun, depending on the time of the day.
Okay. That may be part of the reason why it's not blooming. Peonies, although they will grow in part sunlight, really will bloom best if they're in full sun. So whenever somebody tells me that they've got a peony that isn't blooming really well, I wonder if it's just not getting enough light. The other is, you mentioned that you transplanted it a couple of years ago. Peonies, if they get planted too deeply, will not bloom either. So if they aren't really, really shallow, but they like to be pretty close to the soil surface, those eyes on the peonies. Well, that's what we recommend is that you kind of look at where they were originally planted or when you're transplanting them.
So I
would first look at, you're going to have to move them again anyway if they're not getting enough sun. So get them in better sunlight. It's too late to move them now.
Right.
And so the next thing is when you move them, plant them just a little bit more shallowly and see if the combination will help out.
Why do you think it would have bloomed spectacularly the first summer after I had moved it in the fall?
Because you moved it in the fall, and that, especially if it was a light problem, that they're not getting enough sunlight, it would have stored up enough of the carbohydrates to produce flowers, to make those flowers for the following year. Then the second year, if it's not in enough light, it doesn't photosynthesize enough to make enough carbohydrates to produce the flowers the following year. So I think that's the big problem with it.
I really do not have a north exposure. I only have two places with partial light, and it's in the best place in the yard that I have. Wondering if I should give it a little more time. Is there any fertilizer that I can do to support it?
No, you don't want to fertilize. Fertilize encourages a plant to grow leaves. And
not
sometimes
flowers.
To the detriment of flowers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you're going to have to really try to find it, even if you have to limb up your shrubs or your trees a little bit to get more light into it.
There you go.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you very much
for calling.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling, Susan. And I hope it works out for you.
Yeah.
We had Lynn, who has a word in defense of moles.
Okay.
She emailed. They're a group of animals called insectivora, which means that they're underground, in our grass, eating worms, insects, and larvae. We humans often consider to be pests. Here at our place, we don't trap moles. We just let them do their thing, knowing the few tunnels they make are a small price to pay for the service they are providing. However, sometimes there are a lot of tunnels. And then it becomes, I think, an issue for some people.
Well, we all have different priorities.
And we all, yeah, and each thing has its place. But sometimes, for my taste, there get to be too many moles. Linda in Stratford says, is it too late to plant forgotten tulip, daffodil, and hyacinth bulbs?
No, it's not. As long as you can still dig the ground and put them in, you can plant them. That's fine.
And Kathy in Greenfield, on to you. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have an interesting question. I have a microclimate on the south side of my home.
Okay.
I have ever-bearing strawberries there. We are still harvesting strawberries here in November. I have flowers. I have white strawberries that are starting to turn red. Do I need to pick all those off, or do I let them keep going? Do I tent them? What is my best idea for the ever-bearing? They started in September, and here in November, we're still picking two or three a day.
Yeah, I know. I have some planted at my office, and when I walked out last night, I noticed they're still coming, some of them. I think it's up to you. If you want to try to cover them up with some floating row cover to try to shield them to get maybe a few strawberries for your breakfast cereal on Thanksgiving, you could do that. I guess I would, I'm letting mine at my office, just nature, go ahead and let them go dormant, because I think it's time.
Okay, is this going to affect their producing next year?
No.
If I row cover them right now?
I don't think so. If they're nice and healthy and growing well, I don't think it'll make that much difference.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. I got a Facebook question from Mark, who said, I was given 24 potted hardy mum plants yesterday. If I plant them now, what can I do to help them survive the winter? I imagine they won't get much root establishment this late.
Yeah, and he absolutely right, Mark. They won't. You may get a little bit. The real key for that is to cut them off once they kind of die back. Cut them off and then mulch them really well after the soil gets really cold or preferably frozen. And that's so that you don't get the freeze and thaw back and forth. As the ground freezes and thaws, that's what pops the plants right out of the ground. So cut them off after they die back, mulch them with either curly leaves or straw or something like that when the ground gets really cold.
Kristen in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
My parents live up near Houghton, Michigan, so pretty far up there.
Okay.
They've got a very young tree that kind of magically popped into their backyard, and they said they want to get rid of it, but I want to find out what it is so maybe I can make a case for saving it. And I've tried dichotomous keys, I've tried online, I've tried books. I can't figure out what this thing is.
Hmm.
It's a very young tree, so it's only about a couple feet tall. The branches are more or less parallel. They grow out of the same, more or less at the same knot. The bark is pretty smooth, kind of a grayish brown. The leaves are perfectly symmetrical, a fine serrated edge. They're not lobed, and the tree has little black berries, and they're round. Each berry grows on its own stalk, and each stalk kind of pops out where the leaves of the branches grow. And I thought it was a hackberry, but the leaves are symmetrical and the bark is pretty smooth.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of is possibly hackberry. there are hundreds of trees, so there's just too many possibilities. Can you get pictures or can they take pictures of the leaves and stems?
Not for a couple of weeks.
Well, and not this time of year, probably, very
right.
Well. I think that would probably be the best way to identify get us some photos.
If you can get us some photos, we can get it identified.
Yeah.
And if there's maybe some leaves that are still laying on the ground that you could actually just get a picture of the leaves.
The leaves and some branch, so we even know how they come off. Are they opposite? Are they alternate?
Right.
Some of those kinds of things
they're
are really helpful. They're opposite?
They are opposite.
There are very few things that are opposite.
Yeah.
But
with those black?
The black,
berries.
Berries. Larry and I both. We can't figure off the top of our head. I can't do it. And there's probably somebody there listening going, I know what it is. I know what it is. But I can't right off the top of my head come up with it.
Right.
But get some photos and send them, put them in on, send them to my Facebook page or shoot me an email, but put them up on the Facebook page. You'll probably get an identification very fast.
Yep.
Right. Hopefully it'll still be there when I go up for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
If not, tell them to, that they
tell
can't
to
cut it down, and we've got to identify it first.
Tell them the state of Wisconsin, the public wants to know what this tree is, and if they can't cut it down, or there are going to be thousands of people across the state who are going to be upset.
Inquiring minds deserve to know.
That's
yeah,
right.
That's right.
Right. And if you can get it in flower, that's even better to get those pictures.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. And by the way, you could join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you know what that tree was. David in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I've got another orchard problem.
Okay.
I planted or created an orchard about 6 years ago using semi-dwarf apple trees, and I planted it on a southeast-facing hillside. The first winter, the deer and the bunnies kind of ate all the site or all the branching right off down to the trunk.
Yeah.
And then left me with a nice, tall, skinny trunk.
Okay.
And that next spring, of course, that first winter also, I got some what they call winter scald, where the bark thaws and freezes and then cracks.
Yeah.
Okay, now 6 years later, all I have is these nice tall trunks about, 5-6 feet tall with a little tuft of green leaves on the top. Would it pay to cut the tops or prune those way back and to stimulate some side branching to develop? Or at this point, would it just be easier to dig them up, replace them, and start over from scratch?
I'm not even sure. I really don't know for sure. I would look at how much you've got. I would be concerned about cutting them back, whether or not you're going to have dormant buds lower down on those trunks that'll come out or not very well. Have you got our Growing Apple Trees publication?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They don't address that problem.
Yeah, I know. And I guess the other is I would try to shape or form those and see if you can get those upper branches to kind of do something with it. But if you can't, then you may be better off replacing them. I hate to have you have put that much time and effort into them and them not... and have to start all over again. I would look at trying to train those upper branches and bring them down and see if you can get those into a scaffold branch kind of thing.
Well, that's what I've been doing, but that main trunk then is now four and a half by,
yeah, yeah.
In one couple cases, almost 6 feet high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's not developing a nice thick feet.
Yeah.
Like you see in the commercial orchards,
yeah,
where everything is down low, and then
that's why then you may, if you really want those lower ones, you may have to go back to replacing them.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah,
well,
yeah. You know, the other, yeah,
got
you
nothing
may
to lose.
Yeah, you may want to check with somebody that's much more of an apple specialist than I am. And let's see, you're in Manitowoc. I don't even know if up at the research station or, maybe one of our fruit specialists can help you out better.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Couple of guesses on the mystery tree. Deb and Eau Claire thinks it's buckthorn because it could be buckthorn.
Yep.
In which case you'd want to be getting rid of it.
Uh-huh. And I would guess she might be absolutely right, because some of those are opposite, or some of them are, she's right, where it's what's called sub-opposite.
Yeah.
And they would have little berries on them.
Yeah, they would.
And so if...
That'd be something you'd want to be getting rid of.
Yeah, and she should look the other way to identify buckthorn is look at the very end of the branch, and that's where the thorn is for the buckthorn.
Yeah, at the very
end. At the very end of the branch. So, good thought.
Annie in Marshalltown thinks it might be elderberry. She says to crack a twig and see if there's a white pith under the bark.
Ah, okay.
And that'd be a way to sort of check if it was elderberry. But the buckthorn, you know what?
Yeah, I have a feeling. And that should have popped into both our heads right away, but it didn't.
Well, I just...
No.
That's one of those you just don't want to think about. It's so bad.
I was thinking the same thing. It was like, it's denial.
Oh, man. Betsy in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
What can we
do
for you?
Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning. I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
The first is my backyard is lined with cedar trees, and I've got a huge garden bed underneath the cedar trees. It's a partial sun, and the cedar trees themselves do not shade the garden bed, but I'm having a hard time growing anything there, and I'm thinking that the leaves from the cedar are in some way affecting the soil quality?
Probably not.
Okay.
I would, especially if you're in Milwaukee, you want, if it's adding any little bit of acidity to the soil, that's a good thing in the Milwaukee area. I would definitely, this is a great place where you need to have a soil test done to find out what are the nutrient levels and what's the pH in the soil. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you may be getting, if your flower bed's getting sun so that they're not shading it out, the other may be, there may be some root competition, but it shouldn't make that much difference with your flowers.
Okay. So,
and but, you, yeah, do that soil test and tell them what you want to grow.
Yes.
There. And then they can recommend, well, then they'll recommend amendments to the soil based on the kinds of things you want to plant.
Okay. And do you recommend having actually like a professional test the soil? Because I haven't had the best luck with the kits.
Yes. No, I don't. I never recommend those kits. I suggest the UW Soils Lab. So there is a soils lab with University of Wisconsin. And if you Google University of Wisconsin Soils Lab, it'll bring it up. They'll give directions. You don't need a special bag. You can use a zip top bag for your soil test. And it's not frozen yet. So you could even go out now and do your soil test.
No, it'd actually be a good time to do it.
Yeah,
they get really busy in the spring. So this is, and I think it's Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory.
Yes. Yeah, that's the kind of full one. I would send it to the lab in Verona. There's two labs, and send it to the one in Verona. You go around the garden bed and you take several samples, but the directions are all there on the website.
Okay, great. And then I had another question about a lilac bush that by the time I got to it to trim it back, it's basically a tree now.
Mm-hmm.
There are no smaller branches coming off the bottom to make it look like a bush. It's basically like
it is a tree.
Yeah.
Two tree trunks. Yeah. And I have no idea how to turn that back into a bush if that's in.
Well, you're not getting anything up, not from the lower part of the trunks, but anything up from the ground.
Nothing up from the ground.
Okay.
The flowering branches start, I would say, probably about 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah, there are lilacs that are tree-form lilacs.
Yeah.
And that's probably what you have is a tree-form lilac rather than a bush lilac or a shrub lilac.
Oh, okay.
And so enjoy it for what it is.
So it's probably doing exactly what it's supposed to.
Right.
Right.
Great. Thank you for your advice.
Okay, right. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Email from Nancy in La Crosse has two fuchsia hanging plants that are still blooming.
Wow.
Yeah. Is it possible to overwinter them? If so, how? They are beautiful, have bloomed all summer long. I hate to let them die.
Sure. Bring them in and put them in a nice, bright, sunny window and keep them warm. And don't let them completely dry out, but don't get them too wet either. When plants come in, they don't use as much water because they're not growing as fast.
Yeah.
So be careful not to overwater them.
And an email from Kathy in Kohler, who's dug up her dahlias, and some of the tubers are quite large. How large should I leave them, and should they be cut or broken into smaller ones?
I'm trying to remember dahlia. You can, if you have multiple tubers, you can break them apart, but I don't know. I wouldn't cut the tubers themselves. No.
No. And we got I think we had one other one here that I, email from Sandy in Madison. Heard that we have a gardening magazine just for gardeners in Wisconsin, and many of my guests are contributors. Where can I find a copy of that gardening book? And you know what?
I am aware of that, and it's a brand new publication.
Yeah, it's brand new.
Yeah, brand new. Like within, I don't know, I'm not a contributor, but Sharon Morrissey is, Lisa Johnson is, Aaron LaCrosse is. So there are a number of people that you probably listen to here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So, you know what?
Trying to find that out.
Yeah, you might want to. I don't know if you could check on the. I'm sure you could check on the internet too,
yeah,
and find where to get it.
We'll find it. If we find it, we'll post it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Well, and Judith is really good at that sort of thing. She'll find it. And Barb, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll look forward to your next visit. That's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Barb Larson is the horticulture educator with the UW Extension in Kenosha County. Doesn't she know a lot? Man, oh man, she answered a lot of questions today and with a big smile. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.